forward only, they cannot move backwards because that would be moving into the past. Supposing that you could place a point, or perhaps a finger, on that thin line, then the person in that one-dimensional world would see phenomena in its sky. It would see only that part of your finger actually in contact with the line, and it would be impossible to visualize what you looked like, in that same way as it is impossible for most people in this three-dimensional world of ours to visualize what is behind the so-called flying saucer. If we go on to a two-dimensional world, what would we have? It would be a plain surface, and the inhabitants would have to be flat figures. Now supposing you draw a line around one of these figures, it would prove to be a barrier to him because the line will have thickness, and to a completely flat person height would be beyond his understanding. If he tried to climb up that pencil line, which to him, of course, would be a considerable height, it would be the same as going out into space. Our flat being would not be able to look down on the line and see that it was comparatively flat. Thus a line or an angle would be an astounding phenomena to a flat being. By the way, just try this if you doubt what I am saying. Hold a pencil at a level with your eyes so that the pencil is lengthwise to you. Then behind it hold another pencil end on. You will not be able to see that pencil because it will be hidden by the line of the first pencil. Thus you will be in the position of our flat being, and before you can see the second pencil you will have to enter another dimension, that is, you will have to descend below the level of the pencils or rise above it, so that you can look up or down and see by perspective. The fourth dimension is actually where we have traveled into the astral, because we then have different abilities, and although we can fully exist, although we do exist, we cannot be seen by people of third dimension except as a ghost. Direct cognition, this is full realization. Awareness of that which cannot be taught. One cannot have a full realization of the fourth dimension or of what our over-self is like while we are in the body, nor can another person necessarily convince us of anything connected with this, nor with a God. We have to know by direct cognition, by direct realization. Disassociation, some people have a loose astral body. And when the person in the flesh goes daydreaming, he or she may separate into physical and astral. Some years ago there was a case in France where an unfortunate school teacher, a woman, had this remarkable ability that when she was engrossed in a subject her physical and spiritual bodies parted. It created a lot of alarm in her pupils when they could see two teachers, apparently twins. Eventually it came to the knowledge of the school authorities and the school teacher became a school teacher no more. Disassociation can also relate to a mental state in which a person is not able to control mental processes. Disembodied, when we do astral traveling we are in the disembodied state, that is, our astral becomes disassociated from the physical and we are connected only by the silver cord. When we are thinking of ourselves, we are in the embodied state, that is, the embodied state is a temporary thing and endures only for our stay on earth. The disembodied state means what it says, out of the body. We have to get out of the body to know what we are, what we are doing, and where we are going. Divinity, this is one of the very old original Sanskrit words. It goes back to the earliest days of mankind. It means to shine. Often a deva or a godlike person will be known as the Shining One. In connection with this, you may be interested to remember that when Moses descended from the mountain his face was shining and he had to veil his face so that the shining light was obscured from the common gaze. Dreams, one of the most misunderstood subjects of all. Because of Western man's conditioning, Western man can rarely believe in astral traveling and such things, thus it is that when the astral body rejoins the physical body complete with a lot of most interesting memories, the physical body rejects the story and alters it to fit the facts which are acceptable to Western training. Thus a person who has met another in the astral world and discussed various courses of action, will say in the morning, "Oh, I dreamed of so and so last night. He was in a bad temper. Wonder what it means?" Some dreams, of course, can be caused by eating too much and too richly before going to bed, but that is a mere disturbance of the body functions and cannot be taken seriously. In this case the lower mind and the emotional mind get together and set aside the reasoning part of the mind. One should write down one's so-called dreams immediately one awakens, Because if that is done conscientiously, one soon reaches the stage when one is able to recall the actual astral traveling experience which occasioned the miscalled dream. Dwapara Yuga. Throughout the world, in world religions, there are various systems which divide the life of this world into different periods or cycles. According to Hindu mythology, the world is divided into four stages, each of 864,000 years. The four periods become successively more evil. In the first period, right and good prevails, but with each period, the power of evil increases, the power of wrongdoing increases. At present, we are in the fourth stage, the stage of Kali, and no doubt everyone will agree that the world at present is an evil place in which those of bad intentions invariably get the upper hand, a stage in which treachery succeeds. When this cycle has ended, the world will start again on a new cycle where goodness will predominate. But in the age of Kali, of course, there must be some savior who will start and set the world right. That is the unvarying process. Dvesha, this is aversion, dislike as opposed to like. It goes back into the memory department. If we have had a severe shock, we dislike that which caused the shock, and we try to avoid getting such shocks in the future. We may not be aware of that which caused the shock because it may have been pushed down into our subconscious and a form of amnesia will have taken over to block the unpleasant memory. In the process of analysis, the practitioner helps one to delve down into the subconscious memory to dredge up the unpleasant occurrences, so that having seen the cause of behavior, one can realize that cause, and avoid such behavior patterns in the future. E. Ego. This indicates that part of one which is conscious of I. It is the separate individuality apart from the over-self. There are two kinds of ego. The first is that which is learning willingly or unwillingly. It is undeveloped, untutored, excessively talkative, overconfident without any reason to be confident. That ego is self-centered, arrogant, and aggressive. It is, in fact, the typical man in the street. The other ego is one which has progressed and has learned by experience. It is possessed by those who have attained to much enlightenment. It is a person who is willing to help others even at the risk of inconvenience and trouble for oneself. Egoism is often referred to as the second of the five sources of trouble, and when one thinks of conceited, egotistical people whom we know, we can well understand that this is so. Unfortunately, the less one knows, the more one thinks one knows. Many of these people who are so boastful, who say, "Prove this, prove that, and I don't believe it anyhow," have not even started to learn. It is believed by this writer that few press people are in the developed category, because one of the first requirements is that an ego cannot be developed unless it is willing to consider the feelings and needs of others, a matter singularly lacking with press people. Elementals, most people are horribly confused about elementals. Actually, elementals are a type of thought form which have a sort of half-life of their own. A form of life brought into being by humans. So that one may the more easily understand it, let us say that we have a magnet and the magnet represents the human. Then let us say that we bring the magnet near a piece of iron. Immediately, the iron becomes magnetized to some lesser degree, and so it represents the elemental. Elementals are formed from the etheric substance which was the origin of all complex forms. All the random thoughts of people magnetize etheric substances which give rise to elementals, elementary beings. It should be made clear that many people who go to seances and believe that they have conversed with the spirit of dear departed Aunt Matilda, have really been the victim of a hoax by some elementals. Elementals are irresistibly drawn to seances because it gives them a chance to play a joke on humans. Elementals are as mischievous as monkeys, and possibly even more brainless than monkeys. One of the great dangers of going to seances is that one may be completely deluded by these thought forms. In addition to the elementals, of course, there are nature spirits, but that will be dealt with under N. Elements. There are, of course, quite a number of elements, but to the occultist, the metaphysician, or the astrologer, there are five main elements. They are ether, air, fire, water, and earth. We are not dealing with chemistry here but with astrological law. These elements come into play to a very great extent in astrology, where one can be born under a watery sign, Cancer, and then if one marries a person who was born under a fiery sign, such as Aries, there can be trouble and an unhappy marriage because fire and water do not mix. It is a question of that which is compatible and that which is not compatible. The elements are important things indeed for those who want to study the mechanics of metaphysics. Emotion. Emotion is a state of mind which should be controlled so that it does not interfere with one's metaphysical studies. It is easy to imagine that one has seen a ghost or that one has spoken to a person who has recently left this earth. It is also possible that emotion, fear, will prevent us from doing just that. In esoteric work, one must curb, and train, and restrain the emotions. One must not be too skeptical, and one must not be too willing to accept. One must choose common sense. One must keep a balanced mind and be ready to investigate all matters with an open mind. By open mind, is meant the state where one is not going to condemn and one is not going to believe unless there are reasonable grounds for either state. The middle way is the best way, so that one is not too credulous nor too incredulous. By taking a middle of the road path, one is able to see the scenery on each side and judge accordingly. Enthusiasm, this is one of the things about which one has to be very careful. One must keep one's enthusiasm and one's emotion under control. One must not become excessively enthusiastic. To become over-enthusiastic about a thing disturbs the even tenor of one's existence. We have a certain amount of energy, and if we allot too much energy to one subject, then we have not enough energy to deal with other subjects, and we become unbalanced. In yogic or metaphysical matters, there should be no excitement, no false enthusiasm, and no strong emotions. Here again, the only way to attain to a sound balance is to take the middle way. Etheric double, this is the substance existing between the physical body and the aura. The etheric is of a bluish-gray color, and is not substantial like flesh and bone. The etheric can pass through a brick wall, leaving both intact. The etheric double is the absolute counterpart of the human flesh and blood body, but in etheric form. The stronger a person's physical, the stronger will be the etheric. When a person dies, and that person has had a certain gross interest in life, his etheric double is physically very strong and he leaves a ghost which, through habit, acts in precisely the same way as the person did while in the physical body. A person who has been killed by violence or in a state of terror will have a very strong etheric indeed. People who have died by violence will often leave a ghost which can be seen. Frequently, disembodied etheric doubles try to dissipate their useless energy by going to seances and giving senseless messages. It is clear that if Uncle Timothy has died and Aunt Matilda wants to get in touch with him, she will go to a seance and, because of personal magnetism, she will attract the stupid etheric double of Uncle Timothy. This etheric double has no knowledge but only habits, and so it will react in much the same way as Uncle Timothy did on the earth and will just give senseless information because it has no brain to direct it. The etheric double is a useless thing which has to be dissipated before one is completely free of the bonds of earth. It is the stuff of which senseless ghosts are made. A person who is said to be earthbound is linked to earth by this strong etheric double. Evolution. Everything is in a state of evolution. A child is born as a helpless baby, and gradually evolves into an adult. People go to school, and their evolution is such that they progress from class to class. Men do not become angels on the earthly stage of evolution any more than animals turn into humans on this world. All must evolve according to the plans of the universe, and according to their own species. The development of man, or mankind, has been proceeding for many millions of years. By consulting the Akashic record, you will be able to see that the first form of man was a globe, a creature not altogether solid, not altogether gaseous, something like an unpleasant murky sort of jelly. He had only one eye and no mind. Instead, he was almost an automaton. That was in the first race of man. In the second race there was a difference because certain appendages protruded from the globe which was man, and there was a rudimentary mind much as in the case of a monkey. In the third race of man there was a dividing of the globosphere so that there were two sexes, male and female. You may be interested in some of the different races. In the first case with which we need deal there was the race of the people of Lemuria. Yes, there really was Lemuria. The race at that time did instinct and passion, but they were not possessed of many of the higher emotions, not possessed of aspiration for spiritual pursuits. The earth in those days was still in a stage of development. Great gouts of flame shot out from the interior and there were earthquakes, and the continent of Lemuria sank beneath the waves. After the Lemurian race there came the Atlantean race. This was a definite improvement on the Lemurian because the Atlantean functioned on the higher emotions. They tried to develop their higher emotions, but they also evolved into a more reasoning type of mind. They went in for science a lot and, sadly, they produced an atom bomb thousands and thousands of years ago. The atom bomb went off, and the land called Atlantis sank beneath the waves. There were survivors scattered in various remote districts. Some of their children were affected by radiations, and so there were mutations which caused the Aryan race. The Aryan race is more of a concrete mind than spiritual. In fact, trying to get spiritual thoughts into most people is like trying to break concrete. A sixth race is functioning in the abstract, and eventually in the age of Aquarius, into which we are now entering, they will evolve into a spiritual mind. After this spiritual development we shall have a greater incursion into the abilities of a seventh race. There are some of the seventh race already on Earth, not many of them, but enough to provide a seed or nucleus, and the seventh race will eventually achieve a knowledge of the leaders of this whole solar system. Evolution, then, is that which enables people, or anything, to develop and make progress. Experiences. Many people during their time upon Earth have experiences. They imagine they see things, or they actually do see things. They could be surer if they kept more accurate reports. One should keep paper and pencil about at all times, particularly by the side of one's bed, so that if one is awakened notes can be made before the memory fades. Supposing you are awakened in the night, and you think you see something. Make a note. 1. What did you see? 2. Was it male or female? 3. How was it dressed, in what period clothing? 4. What did it do? Did it come through a wall and stand by your bed? 5. What did it say or indicate to you? 6. What was your reaction? 7. What happened to the figure? Did it disappear, vanish, or go through a wall? 8. Having read the above, what conclusions can be formed? Was it hallucination? Was it a person that I recognized? Was it a person who appeared real? In the morning read your notes, and then you can add to them anything which came from your subconscious in the night. It must be explained again, though, that many really authentic cases of visitations are lost to the world because the person who saw the visitor either dived beneath the bedclothes or was too confused to have any accurate memories. There are such things as ghosts, but if a person would not harm one when in the flesh, why should that person harm one when out of the flesh? Eyes, everyone knows what eyes are, but the purpose of including that word here is so that we can deal with relaxation of the eyes, because eyes are among the most ill-used organs of the body. It is essential that during meditation the eyes must not be strained. Most people focus their eyes on some imaginary object, or even upon some actual object. This is definitely harmful because it tires the eyes by requiring that the eye muscles remain in a fixed position. One should look into the far distance, look beyond infinity so that the eye muscles are not being strained. You can, if you wish, relax your eyes by letting them wander, but, naturally, not while meditating. Let them wander so that the muscles are put in varying positions, and thus are not in any one position long enough to become tired or strained. A good eye massage exercise is to put the palms of one's hands over the eyes, and then move the hands slightly in order to form a cup. That is, when you pull out the palm of the hand while keeping the edge of the hand around the eye socket, you form a hollow with lessened air pressure. If one presses on the eye's bony frame and then slightly eases away the palm, One can feel slight tension on the eyeball because the air pressure enables the liquid in the eye to push the eye out a bit. Then when you press in, you get the opposite effect, and so you have a really relaxing eye massage. This is from the Chinese and it denotes the law or regulations. It indicates that one must follow the right precepts if one is going to make right progress. Until you can progress, you will have to keep coming back to this dreary old world. Face, look at the average person, look at the lines and wrinkles on their face, look at their tense, screwed up X-pays sign. And when they think they are meditating, they become screwed up all the more. This is unfortunate because one cannot meditate when one is tense. If you find that your face is becoming stiff, try relaxing it. Bend forward so that your face is parallel with the floor. Make sure that the muscles of the face are quite slack as you can make them. See, also, that your lips are not tightly compressed. You can have your mouth slightly open if you prefer. The eyes should be either very slightly open or shut, but you must not shut them tightly because if you do, you are tensing muscles. Relax the whole face, and then imagine that you are a dog who has just come out of the water sopping wet. Shake your head sharply as a dog does, so that even your ears waggle and your hair do comes undone. Do that several times, pretend there is water on your face and you have to shake it off with sharp movements. Do this, and it really will shake out folds in your muscles. When you have done this several times, sit up straight, and stretch your neck as far up as you can. Imagine that you are a giraffe or one of those native tribes women who put rings on the neck in order that the neck may be lengthened. When you have stretched your head as far up as you can, pull it down to your shoulders as far as you can, pull it right down into your shoulders so that your neck really is compressed. Stretch up your head again, and make it come down again. Do it several times, and every third time shake your head sharply like a dog does. This will help you more than you imagine. Faith, we must have faith if we are going to seek after knowledge because some things require that we have faith while we are still seeking for proof, and if a person goes seeking for a thing determined that they will not find it, then they will not find it. It is wise to hold firm to the conviction that based upon intellectual ability we can ascertain that the thing under discussion is true. In faith we try to prove that a thing is right, not, as so many do at present, try to prove that a thing is false. Faith is no idle, senseless, ignorant belief. Faith grows and grows as one explores that in which one has faith. Fear, one of the greatest dangers in any form of occult study is of being afraid. In the East, teachers tell the pupil, "Fear not, for there is naught to fear but fear." Fear corrodes our abilities for clear perception. If we are not afraid, nothing whatever can hurt us or disturb us. Therefore, fear not. It is worth particularly noting that when one is doing astral travel, there is no need for fear. Elementals or astral entities cannot hurt one, but if we are afraid, well, our fear upsets us, upsets our digestion, for instance. Again, let it be stated that no one can be harmed in the astral except by oneself, that is by getting frightened and rushing back with such a thunk that one becomes disassociated from the body. If you come back into the body with a shocking jerk and get a headache after it, the remedy is simple: rest again and go to sleep, so that your astral body can leave the physical and resettle in the correct location in the physical body. Fokiao, this is a Chinese interpretation of the Buddhist religion. As we have already stated, Buddhism is a code of living, a way of living, but in order to follow common usage it is referred to here as a religion. Fokiao is the Chinese name for Buddhism as a religion. Fosue, this is Buddhist learning. Buddhism, when treated as a philosophy or way of life, instead of is a religion. Again, it is from the Chinese concepts. Forces, there are four forces which need concern us. They are, 1. Natural forces. When we are at school we study a group of forces known as physics, or, if you prefer, heat, light, sound, electricity, and magnetism, and then one gets quite a dislike of poor old Pythagoras who worked out those weird and wonderful theorems which cause one so much trouble. 2. The etheric forces, Among these is included the power of the Kundalini. Those of the second group are still connected to natural phenomena because the Kundalini, and all that it implies, gets only as far as the etheric double before becoming a metaphysical force instead of an earth natural force. 3. The ancient Egyptian priests specialized in this, which we might term force 3. They protected their tombs with thought forms which really could make one frightfully uncomfortable. Force 3 consists of all those things which are generated from the mind, and which, once generated, go on and on perhaps for centuries, until they have dissipated their original energy. While this third force is still connected with nature, it is on a much more remote basis because we are now two stages removed from the crude, basic, natural force. 4. This is a force which can be generated by living entities because of the power of love, hate, etc. They are quite as powerful as are any of the preceding three. Telepathy, clairvoyance, psychometry, levitation, teleportation, etc., come under this group. Astral traveling does not come under this force, because astral traveling is just releasing the astral body from imprisonment in the physical body. Four fruits, according to various Eastern beliefs, the four fruits of human life are that each fruit shall develop and ripen and come to full growth. The first fruit is that of morality and purity of thought. This makes one a decent person who is able to progress on the spiritual path. Secondly, there is security of position, so that the temple of the soul, which, naturally, is the body, is not damaged by excessive poverty or suffering. It should be stated that in some conditions one has to have poverty and suffering because of karma, but as a general rule it is better that one is able to attain to the middle way, not too rich, not too poor, not starving, but not overfed. The third fruit is that by which one has one's legitimate desires fulfilled. It comes as a reward for right living, right thinking, right behaving. A legitimate desire does not include the desire of having a new car or a new coat, or things which are for vanity or to show. A legitimate desire is a desire to help others and to save others from unnecessary distress. It is also legitimate to desire to progress and advance, again unselfishly, again so that one may help others. The fourth, and best, of the fruits is that one shall speedily attain to release from the ties of this world. It means liberation from karma, the end of one's incarnations and reincarnations upon the earth system. When one has the last of the four fruits, when one has escaped from the toils of the earth, then one can, if one is foolish, volunteer to come back to this dreary old spot to help others. When you attain to that position, and you are on the other side, leave instructions that if you ever decide to volunteer, your friends will have your sanity tested, because it does appear that nowadays things are rather out of hand on the earth, and things are much too hard. However, we are in the age of Kali, and that gloomy age will pass away and the sun will shine again with the dawn of a new era, and with an upsurge of spiritual purity. G. Gayatri, this is the name given to a most important mantra. Christians recite the Lord's Prayer, which, after all, is just a Christian mantra. The Hindu recites the Gayatri. A Hindu will go through certain ceremonies, and then recite this mantra daily. Here are the actual words, Om, Ba, Bhuva, Swa. Tat Savikurvara Nyambargo Devasya Damahi. Dioyona Prakadi Ayat. Om. The meaning of this translated into English is, we meditate upon the ineffable effulgence of that resplendent sun day, may that sun direct our understanding for the good of all living. This is a mantra which could be recited by Christians with much profit. Ghost, that hairy thing which swishes around in the night with a few creaks and groans, and which causes the hair on our heads to stand straight up, is harmless. A ghost is just an etheric force which wanders about according to the habits of its previous owner, until eventually that etheric force, that etheric double, is dissipated. A strong healthy person who is suddenly killed by perhaps extreme violence, has a very strong etheric. If a person is being attacked, then he or she focuses the etheric into a strong entity. If, then, the silver cord is suddenly severed in that process which we call death, the astral body goes off, the physical body decays, and the poor etheric becomes a homeless, mindless, wandering waif. Throughout the whole life of the body, the etheric has been modeled on that body, it is a habit pattern of the body.